Is there bullying in the ocean?
Yes.
Do you ever see animals just messing with other animals and hurting other animals just for the sake of hurting them?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, Brenda. No.
I'm Nick Ebling, founder and CEO of Not Impossible Labs. For the past 15 years, we've been on a mission to change the world through technology and story by addressing societal problems to improve the lives of everyone. With a crew of engineers, hackers, entrepreneurs, technologists, storytellers, and artists, we've tackled and solved some of the world's most incredible challenges. But here's the thing. We're just a small team in Venice Beach. The world is full of people making the impossible possible. My goal now with this podcast is to find these people, share their stories, and hopefully, together, we can keep pushing the limits of what's possible. On today's episode, we talk to the SETI team, who's figured out a way to communicate with whales in hopes of learning how to one day talk to aliens.
If whales have sentences, then maybe we can finish a sentence.
If we're not detecting things out in space, but we can't even understand what animals in our own oceans are saying, is there a perceptual gap?
We do know that animals eavesdrop on each other.
Animal eavesdropping. That's going to be a whole new podcast episode for us. What's that? I would like to welcome everybody to the podcast. I am joined with, I'm going to have each of you just give a quick introduction to yourself, just your name, rank, serial number, mother's maiden name, social security, the usual stuff, so that the public will be able to, you know, do any type of identity theft that is just typical and things like this. But we can go through that and then we'll get into the conversation. So we'll start. I'll just call it out. Lisa, let's start with you, because in my Brady Bunch squares, I see you at the top.
Hi, my name is Lisa Walker. I am a whale song theorist. I take my background in music and composition and apply it to understanding the vocalizations of the humpback whale.
Fred.
Yeah, my primary interest is in behavioral ecology and working with the humpbacks in the field to answer both curiosity-driven questions about their social structure and meaning of their acoustics, as well as conservation-based initiatives.
Jody.
Yes, I am a marine photographer, and I have been studying and observing humpback whale behavior for about 24 years now, both on the breeding grounds and the feeding grounds. And prior to that was trained animals and worked with animal behavior. So I'm interested in the whole ball of wax.
Josephine.
So I am a animal behaviorist and postdoctoral scholar at UC Davis, really interested in animal behavioral flexibility and cognition.
And Brenda.
Hi, I'm Brenda McCowan. I'm a professor of animal behavior at the University of California, Davis and the California National Primate Research Center. And my area of expertise is in biobehavioral complexity and specifically looking at animal communication and social dynamics in a number of different species, including humpback whales.
Incredible. Why is it important to understand what animals, just we'll talk macro, what animals are communicating? Why is that important?
Well, we share the world with these beings, and they're remarkable in their own right. They're also parts of natural integrated ecological systems that sustain us and sustain the planet. And so making sure that their well-being is addressed as much as our own will, I think, assist with long-term planet survivability.
I also see other non-human animals as being, you know, our comrades. And that by understanding them better, we will better understand ourselves.
On August 18th, a group of 9 whales, and correct me if I'm wrong, tell me if I've got this correct, but on, oh, all right, Jody is even putting a hand up right now. I didn't even get past the date.
Well, I'm only
this
saying
is the, that- This is the correct me if you're wrong section, and I didn't even get correct me if I, didn't even finish that before she slapped me down.
This is because I tried to be quiet about it. I did my homework. I went back and I looked at my fluke photos and a an assessment or identification of the whales that was done by somebody else who was on the voyage. And we identified 5 different whales. We told you 9. That's on us, not on you.
Okay. All right. No problem. I thought you were going to say, hey, they weren't whales, actually. It was impersonators. James Cameron was shooting an underwater avatar. And I was like, oh, the whole thing's blown. All right. So on August 18th, 2021, you recorded a questionable number of whales that have that yet to be proved, but Jody says it's 5 whales, one of whom was named Twain. And on August 19th, you played back a recording of what's called a whoop call.
A whoop call is a low-frequency sound humpback whales use to stay in touch. It's how they contact each other across distances.
That you had recorded the day before through hydrophones that you dropped into the water. That was about 3 miles from where the original recording was. And one whale, then approached the boat and responded to the whoop call. And you replayed that now, I think it was 33 times over a period of 20 minutes. And Twain responded every single time. So is this, let's just start, because it's called Not Impossible. Transition from impossible to not impossible. Was this the first time that this had happened where there was some type of call and response action that we had had with humpback whales?
Yes. There have been a variety of other types of playbacks done to both humpback whales and other baleen whales. Oftentimes playback studies will just use a static predetermined set of what we call exemplars or outgoing sounds. Those sounds are not varied depending on the information that is coming back from the animal.
A static approach is basically playing pre-recorded sounds. The real breakthrough, a dynamic approach. They adjusted the sounds in real time and Twain, in response, adjusted her replies. It's amazing that with just 3 computers, one to record, one to tweak sounds, and one for playback, we can create real whale interactions.
And so being able to engage these animals in this extended interaction bodes well for the future because it means the animals can, using an acoustic modality, sort of get interested in the human signals and be present with you for this 20-minute period.
So you recorded a whale saying something, and then you played it back. How do we not know that someone wasn't saying, like, hey, you got a little krill on your cheek and you might need to wipe it off, or, you know, some other thing that was being said?
Well, because the whoops are often recorded when the animals are dispersed over a wide area, we believe often by singletons. So it suggests it's one of these calls that's out of context, that there's some distance between the animals. So again, that suggests that it sort of operates like a contact call. So we were just sort of expecting with the playback is to get animals returning back their vocalization every so often. We weren't necessarily expecting to have a more extended interaction.
I just want to add one thing is that when you record something and then make it into a picture, like a spectrogram, you can see that the whoop call is very clearly defined. It has this low growl component and then an upsweep. So it can shift in frequency, but when you see it on the spectrogram, you can identify it as the whoop call.
And many, many contact calls are structured that way in terms of spanning a number of frequencies. It makes it highly localizable. So the animals know where each other are. So it's you know, we're not entirely sure exactly what the function of that call is, but there's a lot of consensus, as Fred has just said, that it's probably some type of contact call.
It seems like it's a giant game of animal Marco Polo, right? They're yelling out Marco. Someone else says Polo. They're like, oh, Bruce is over there. Twain's over there. Shania's behind me. Da da da. And we got that. We have a way to sonar, you know, with an audio function, we're able to identify where people are.
Right. It provides a map of where individuals are. We think there's individual variation. Fred, you can speak to this more than I can, but I think it's starting to be shown that there's individual variation in these calls as well that could be used to identify particular individuals. So yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I've actually used that analogy before. It's a little bit like a Marco Polo thing that went on. It's just that it was done within 100 meters of our boat with an animal circling our boat, which was very unusual.
And with the animal being present the day before when we recorded the exemplar and then showing up, you know, several miles from the location we had recorded it the day before and coming over to our boat as we played it back to her.
And it may be that, you know, either it was herself that produced that call or it was a group member in that group that day because it was recorded from that group that she was in. And just like anybody who is familiar with a friend's voice, it may be that she was responding because it was something that she was familiar with. So,
right. Or Brenda, everyone hates the sound of their own voice on their voicemail, or she was just really pissed off that you guys were playing her voice over and over and over again.
But if she was pissed off, then why at the end of the experiment with under our permit requirements, we had to stop issuing the exemplar. She kept on vocalizing.
She kept talking.
She for three more vocalizations as she swam off, she was whooping back to us.
I think that we saw that. That is so special that she was doing that. So I'm going to say that you didn't piss her off, that you would use her own voice. I'm going to say just because of that, it was one of her friends. And maybe one of her friends was saying something nice about her too. So, you know, we'll never know. You are part of, I don't know if I describe it as a team or it's part of a thinking called SETI. SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So somehow along the way, this conversation has gone from, wait, we're not just communicating to whales, but this is part of a higher purpose about extraterrestrial intelligence. Say more about SETI, say more about the purpose of SETI, and say more about, if you could just teach us the secret handshake so that at least we could know that before we get off the call.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and that's actually how this team initially formed. You know, realizing that, you know, if we're not detecting things out in space, but yet we can't even understand what animals in our own oceans are saying. I mean, is there perceptual gaps in our ability to, I mean, to detect extraterrestrial life, and we could be awash in electromagnetic signals that contain information about life-bearing sender, but we're just not cued into it yet.
Whoa, hold up. Fred just threw out a wild theory. Basically, the search for intelligent life beyond our planet might actually start right here on Earth. What if aliens have been trying to talk to us for years, but we just don't have the tech or understanding to recognize it? I mean, we can't even figure out how most animals on our planet communicate, so what makes us think that we'd understand extraterrestrials? Take whales, for example. They talk to each other across miles of ocean. Kinda sounds like something an alien would do, right?
And as we look to Earth and see all this amazing diversity of intelligence and the diversity of communication and the diversity of ecological niches that animals are exploiting, I would say that there almost statistically has to be life out there somewhere. It just seems that the mathematics are in favor of us potentially discovering some sort of alien civilization. And so that the lessons that we can draw from, like, let's say, listening to humpback acoustics, how do they propagate sound over long distances? And one thing that they do is they have very large silences between their vocalizations and, let's say, their song. How can we use that as a template to potentially construct a communication system with these extraterrestrials that one day we hope to meet?
Do you think that we have the opportunity in the delving into understanding to learn from them, not just to be curious about what they're saying, but to actually get insights into things that we're trying to discover?
We have discovered a lot in the last 50 or 60 years about how complex these animals are. We didn't think animals had culture until, you know, the 1970s and 80s. They do. We are seeing complex communication
systems. What do you mean
systems.
By culture? When you say we didn't know they had culture, what do you mean?
Variation in behavioral patterns across different populations. Something that Josie's interested in, like, for example, the behavioral flexibility of changing the way you do things based upon your environment and who you're interacting with. So that's what I mean by culture. It actually fits the definition, but we've spent a lot of time separating humans from other animals, and yet we find that there are a lot of similarities, even if we're evolutionarily divergent.
And I think what's important to add there is that, of course, we can, to bring that community together to try to understand what parallels there might be across animals is super valuable. But also each animal evolves in a different environment. And of course, their abilities and communication systems are adapted for those environments. So we have to keep in mind both their similarities and differences when we're trying to make strides in animal communication.
Have you seen or studied the ability for animals, different types of animals being able to communicate with each other?
That's a good question. I haven't studied that particularly. My focus has been on how the definition of flexibility, behavioral flexibility, being able to adjust your behavior to match your environment. So a lot of my doctoral thesis work focused on how urban animals, primates in particular, non-human primates, can adjust to coexist with people and how it affects their natural behavior. What I will say is that we do know that animals eavesdrop on each other and they gain information from others that can be beneficial. So that's a whole section of research that we could talk about.
You got to say more about that. Animal eavesdropping, that's going to be a whole new podcast episode for us. What's that?
Yeah, it's really cool. The idea that, for example, if there is a threat in the environment and one bird sends off an alarm call, like what Brenda was talking about earlier, other birds can hear that alarm call and know that if they have a similar shared threat that they should be.
I'd like to jump in with a couple of examples. Brenda had mentioned alarm calls and, you know, Josie just talked about that. And that's, to me, been one of the more fascinating studies. I haven't observed it personally, but Khan Slobotchikov studied this and found that they had specific calls, i.e. like a noun, for each potential predator. So a hawk would have one call, a wolf would have another call, a dog would have a different one, a human, you know, might have one. And then as they began to parse this out without the help of AI, they found that they had identifiers for the speed at which the predator was moving or the color of the predator. So it appears that they included adjectives and adverbs in their communications.
As we wrap it up, what are your hopes and dreams in terms of what you see in the near and the maybe not so near future in terms of how this, your ability to communicate with whales progresses?
So I think what we learned from this experiment, because I mean, we all know it was an N of one, a single example of this kind of dynamic exchange in a very simplistic way, because all we could change was the timing of the playback and see how she responded by matching temporally to that, is to actually develop a system where we can more adaptively and dynamically change what we're playing back in real time. So that, you know, maybe if whales have sentences, again in quotes, just like conversing, then maybe we can finish a sentence by understanding the patterns of their own communication system and then using that in this dynamic adaptive playback way. I think that's what we hope to do in the future. Obviously, with care, we want to make sure that we're not doing anything harmful to the whales or any other species, for that matter, in these kinds of playback experiments.
I just wanted to say thank you. We are huge, huge admirers of your work. I hope that at some point we get a chance to go on one of your voyages so we can witness this ourselves. And when you have more progress in this space, we would hope that you would reach out. We really, really want to understand if they are saying things like, hey, do you want krill or or shrimp for lunch today? That's what I want to hear. It really comes down to lunch choices. That's what we want to know. How do humpbacks decide what they're eating for lunch?
Oh, the mysteries of the universe.
How do they find it? That's what I want to know.
Yes. And does it taste good?
Yeah, exactly. And are the calves complaining? They're like, oh, krill again?
Mom, give me milk.
Yes.
Yeah, my spell checker keeps trying to change misticate to masticate. And chewing is the one thing that these whales definitely do not do. They eat their victims whole.
Well, Lisa, Fred, Brenda, Josie, Jody, thank you guys for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. Keep up the incredible work. And keep making the impossible not impossible. And that wraps up another episode of the podcast where we talk to some of the most fascinating people who are transforming the impossible into the not impossible. A big thank you to the SETI team for sharing how their work with whale communication could pave the way for interspecies and even interplanetary dialogue. It's conversations like these that remind us that even our most out-of-the-world dreams are within the limits of possibility. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platforms. And remember, change is hard, but making the world a better place, it's not impossible.